really, that reminds me of where Rickert ends up in chapter 8. He tells this great story of these folks on Toronto Island who were resisting the plans to build a bridge so that cars could come onto this island that currently didn't have cars on it. And I feel like Rickert does this, for me, pretty amazing job of helping me see ambient rhetoric in action in a way that I wish I could have told my student then. Because here's what he said. He said that the Toronto Islanders, in a way that they somewhat did, but somewhat could have done better, they, quote, need to move from the idea of countering to what we might describe as enlivening, making their unique way of life real, palpable, and valuable to others and to themselves. Page 259. In other words, those folks living on Toronto Island, they didn't need classical argument. They didn't need to stand up in a courtroom and be like, okay, if I invent this well enough and arrange it well enough and use the right style and memorize and deliver it, then people will be convinced. Right. That just wasn't enough. They needed to let people know what the entire island was like, in what ways the island disclosed itself to them, in ways that affected what their lives were like, and how they lived there, and all of the complexities of what that means to live somewhere. And so if only I could have told my student that, hey, what are all of the complex ways that cars and bikes are wrapped up in the way that you live, the way that you enact your life as a student? Could you in some way invite people into that kind of living in an ambient sense, with attention to everything that you can find and everything that does disclose itself to you? Always knowing that you can't know everything, that there will always be some things that are withdrawing.